Hey, this is Peter Biello, host of The Bookshelf from NHPR. And if you like this podcast, you will also like NHPR's 10-Minute Writer's Workshop. In each episode, NHPR's Virginia Prescott speaks with authors about their process, their bad habits, and their best advice for aspiring writers. So even if you are not a writer, it is fascinating to hear how today's notable authors get their work done. Really, really inspiring if you are a writer. Interesting, even if you aren't. So subscribe to the 10-Minute Writer's Workshop on iTunes or wherever you download your podcasts. Okay, onto the bookshelf. This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. When you're talking about form poetry, the rules for the Japanese haiku are pretty simple. In a traditional haiku, you've got 17 syllables, a line of 5, a line of 7, and then another line of 5. Usually, the haiku hones in on details of the natural world and does so with a light touch. In his new book, Like Water, Lebanon author Kay Selim Montas offers us Japanese haiku that he wrote in his native Spanish that have now been translated into English. And he joins me now to talk about his book. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. It is actually my pleasure.
So this is a fascinating book because, first of all, the haikus are Japanese. That's a Japanese form. You wrote them in Spanish, and now they are in English. They've been translated into English. Tell me about the process of turning these poems that were originally written in Spanish into English. You had a translator, and I assume you were working with them.
Correct. So the idea behind doing that is sort of exposing myself to the English-speaking market, if you will. But at the same time, it's a fascinating process to do translation. So when I first proposed it to the translator, she was like, haiku, that's kind of difficult. I said, well, let me send you the book. I sent her the book, and she looked at it, and she got back to me and said, let's do this. And then we began working. She did the whole translation, and then we met and began going over the poems one by one, see what sounded right, what worked, what didn't work. After that, of course, there was a process of editing and changing and suggesting. So translation is fascinating, I will say.
Especially difficult when it's such a rigid form, right? The haiku has, you followed the traditional model, which is there are three lines, and there are 17 syllables total, and they go 5-7-5.
Correct.
And as was stated in one of the forewords here in this book, is that sometimes the English-Spanish equivalents have different syllables, so the translation gets a little messy there.
Yes, it does, and then you have to look for different words, make sure that they don't stray too far from the original meaning. Sometimes you have to add something here and there that might add an emphasis because you want to stay sort of loyal to that original, but it is challenging.
Well, what draws you to the form of haiku?
In general, I'm attracted to Japanese culture, Japanese woodworking, and Japanese poetry. And the haiku has that attraction of being that such a restrictive form, yet at the same time, you try to capture something that is really, really profound, a reflection of a particular moment. And if you stick to the guidelines, it's like to accomplish something that you feel great about is a great sense of accomplishment within that restrained form, if you will.
Mm-hmm. The rules almost make it more fun to write.
In a way, I usually think of rules and I think of democracy. I think one of the great things about having certain rules that they are known and everybody sees them is that everybody has to play fair. Doing great and having fun within the rules is awesome.
So if you see a haiku that doesn't follow the rules but pulls off something kind of nice, you'll say, well, but come on, you know, you didn't measure the syllables correctly.
I wouldn't call myself a stricter in that sense. But when I write, I prefer to stick to the rules. But again, people are experimenting with different things. And I have seen things that I wouldn't dare call them haiku. But if they do, I respect them.
Okay. All right. And one of the rules that you followed here, too, is that you made use of season words, at least one in each poem. Describe what you mean by that.
Season words to sort of allude to what the season of the year is within the poem. And that has a particular attraction to me because I come from the Caribbean. Seasons, they are pretty much one.
Summer, perpetual summer.
And then coming here to New England and having a beautiful backyard, I have sort of been able to appreciate from my window at my writing table, looking outdoors and see the changing of the seasons. Extreme beauty. So that's also been an inspiration, I will say, for the writing of the book. And therefore, haiku that has that as part of its rules, if you will, it sort of easy is that transition for the appreciation of nature and then putting that into my work?
Well, I think we've gone too long without hearing one. So is there one in this collection, like water, that you feel comfortable or would like to share?
Sure. There is one particular poem, because I just spoke to a friend about what is happening right now with the melting of snow, that I thought that I read. This poem says, "Crystal fluid state in the purring sound that flows en route to April."
Traditionally, poems, not just that one, but many in this book, tend to be about nature. For me, the ones I enjoyed the most were the ones that most successfully almost humanized the landscape. Is that something that you were going for?
I'm glad that you feel that way, because I wasn't necessarily consciously going for that, but I was actually trying to make that connection between what I was seeing and my own relationship with nature. So if you are feeling that, I'm going to put a feather on my shoulder or on my hat for that one.
And some of these poems in the towards the end especially are poems that I think any writer out there would certainly appreciate. "Today, without words, it's impossible to live as without water."
I think words are and language is what sort of the greatest human quality that we have. It's what makes us human. And then water, if I were to make an expression or give an example of what God is, I would say that God is water. It is the power of nature. It's the only element that you could see as a gas, as a solid, as a liquid. When you see now the spring, when you see the brooks or the rivers just roaring with that power, we see storms. And yet, we humans depend on water, and when we look for signs of life anywhere, say, if there's water, there's life. So to me, as a writer and as a human being, words are as essential for my existence as is water.
Well, Casey, thank you very much for coming in and speaking to me about your book.
Thank you for having me. Delighted to be here.
That's Casey Lim Montas, also known as Casey Montas, and he's the author of the new collection of haiku, Like Water. And you can find a list of the top 5 books on Casey's bookshelf at nhpr.org. We are always looking for reading recommendations from listeners like you. Kathy from Philadelphia wrote in to recommend a book called My Grandfather Would Have Shot Me by Jennifer Tiga. Kathy writes, "Adopted as a child, Tiga came to learn that she is the granddaughter of a Nazi war criminal as depicted in the movie Schindler's List. What is so interesting is how she learned of this. We won't spoil it for you here, but it is in that book, again called My Grandfather Would Have Shot Me by Jennifer Tiga. And you can help your fellow listeners discover unappreciated titles by sending that recommendation to us. Our email address is books@nhpr.org. You can also tweet us at @NHPRBookshelf. This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for listening.